calmly and evenly engraved a dragonfly onto a bracer. Almost instinctively, his breathing became extremely even and slow, to the point where a normal human would have suffocated. With his exceedingly high vitality, it wasn't even something he would notice in such a short period. Even though he took his time, the engraving was finished in 15 minutes. He held the completed work up for his examination. By his animated expectation, a spark of excitement raced through Randedly's heart. Apprentice's leather bracer, level 25, leather armor worked by an apprentice, but made with poor materials. Vitality plus 2, health plus 26, rain engraved 2. Engraving of dragonfly, 80%, rare. The wind seems to move with the wearer, aiding in both offensive and defensive speed. A thin layer of air is wrapped around the wearer, protecting them like an armor. Wearer gains Aspect of Dragonfly 3. Aspect of Dragonfly 3, reaction plus 7, agility plus 10, rain engraved 2. The engraver has developed his own basic personal process of engraving, and benefits begin to accrue within the armor. Mana plus 15, focus plus 3. The bracer seemed small and worn, but randomly, it was the culmination of 2 long years of effort. Engraving might be a support skill, but he would never have been able to prepare so many potion materials without the money he earned from it. Let alone breaking out of the prison, even freeing Shawl would have been impossible without the Shadow Rune and the benefits that it provided to him. Randedly made a mental note that the debt he owed the Willow Tree Spear Style was even larger than he thought, and carefully placed the newfound bracer into his inventory. Although he would make his own armor soon, Randedly was confident he could repeat this accomplishment. Seeing that the rest were still occupied with the material dumping, Randedly informed a frowning Develtian of his plan and headed out across the nearby boats, heading for Claptrap's boat. It was a rather short trip, and when he arrived, Randedly hesitated briefly, because it was clear Claptrap was meeting with someone else. He honestly didn't really know what to do about it. Randedly's natural social awkwardness had been greatly ground down by his 2 years in the prison, so Randedly just shrugged and pushed through the door. Both figures looked up at him, Claptrap with his rather skinny, fat body, and a slim man who wore a smile. When Randedly entered, Claptrap's eyes widened, and his own smile stretched from ear to ear.
"You're still alive,"
he squeaked, running over to Randedly and giving him a large hug. Randedly awkwardly patted him on the back. Sure, they were kind of business partners, but this level of affection seemed a bit insane. Maybe Claptrap was more emotionally needy than Randedly originally anticipated? The smiling man laughed and walked over.
"Ah, you are the wonderful engraver who has so helped my style. I am Artisan Dway, of the Crashing Wave style. Claptrap was just assuring me that you would arrive with the new batch of armor any day now."
Randedly's eyes twitched almost imperceptibly. Was there a hint of a threat there? Randedly wasn't sure what the man's actual strength was, but he was an artisan, which made him wary. All those inside the prison at the artisan level had been stronger than Randedly, but they had been training through constant combat of dozens of years as they served out their various sentences. Still, with access to dungeons, who knew how much this man had trained? Randedly banished the thoughts and shook Artisan Dway's hand. It was better to not make more trouble than he had to deal with, especially now.
"Yes, here."
Randedly unceremoniously dumped the 300 or so engraved armors on the ground, careful to keep his few Shadow Rune engraving attempts to himself. Still, there were quite a bit of each kind, with most being over 60% efficacy. His eyes glittering, Artisan Dway began to check them all. Claptrap sprinted over with a ledger, drool practically coming out of his mouth. Randedly hesitated for a second, but grabbed his arm. With a flourish, Randedly produced his 80% efficacy bracer and offered it to Claptrap. Perhaps this level of efficacy would cause problems for them, the same way the Shadow Rune would, but Randedly figured that while the efficacy problem might be more of an issue, It didn't have much more room to grow. As long as the rune was still relatively basic, the engraving guilds would likely take their time in responding. A rune on the level of the shadow rune might draw undue attention faster than he was willing to risk.
Oh. Oh, oh, oh,
Claptrap said, his face flushing red. Claptrap's hands trembled reverently as he looked down at the thing. It might seem like a small boost. After all, the 60% bracers usually gave somewhere between 10 and 14 extra stats, while this gave 20, plus the extra mana. But the two highest stats were relevant to the combat-focused nation they were a part of. In addition, to get an extra 10 stats from only a single piece of armor, it was an accomplishment people were willing to pay money for. Money on the order of a few hundred silver. Randidly leaned back, slightly reassured by the fervor and enthusiasm with which Claptrap entered into negotiations with Artisan Dway for the bracer. They quickly outstripped their previous cost structure and began talking in a very direct way about values and what markets Claptrap would have for such a powerful piece of engraving, apart from the crashing wave style. Randidly didn't care much for the money, aside from providing for his potion making, which he expected to be very generously overshooting right now. He said very little, aside from informing them he could now make the gazelle, oxen, dolphin, and praying mantis runes. Artisan Dway finally battered down Claptrap, and they settled on a price, transitioning into what the crashing wave style would want for their next order. Then Artisan Dway turned to Randidly.
It is a strange thing, but over 80% efficacy, there is the chance that some pieces will have an extra ability. We will pay very heavily for those pieces. If you continue to improve, I'm sure you will find that ability.
Artisan Dway stored the equipment, handed over his money, and prepared to go. During that time, Randidly turned to Claptrap.
Were you able to learn anything about the Spear Phantom style?
Claptrap flushed, then shook his head.
I asked around to a few people, but I'm honestly not very popular around here, so...
I know that story,
Artisan Dway said, his typical smile fading away. He looked seriously at Randidly.
Would you like to hear about the founder of your style? It is not a pretty story.
Randidly shrugged. Life is not a pretty place. Artisan Dway chuckled and walked over to a small table in the corner. After Claptrap brought them all a glass of wine, the artisan began to speak. Chapter 89.
I heard this story from the current patriarch of the Crashing Wave style, an offshoot of the Endless Sea style, based in the capital of the central region. He told me that for a long time before more information came out, Shaul was widely idolized by the young elites in the capital for his heroism in defeating the Devourer. By the end, they just ignored him, like everyone else. Still, that comes later. First and most importantly, there was a man who would become the Spear Phantom, Emont. Because Shaul's story is only a small part of following in the footsteps of his father. No one really knew Emont's family. He enrolled in a small, two-bit style and worked hard to learn it. So hard, in fact, that the people around him were shocked. After all, this was the capital of the central region. There were thousands of styles fighting viciously over the new recruits that came to the capital, seeking their fortune, putting their lives on the line with just their spear. Those that possessed talent and dedication would go to the larger styles. If this boy was here, and with such an excellent work ethic, there could be only one explanation. He had no talent with the spear. Which was true, in a way. Emont was serious, though clumsy. The spear was not his weapon. He did have two things very early on in his career, where most others might train for years to obtain. Those were two skills, battle intent and the very amorphous struggle, and struggle Emont did. There were rivalries and duels, grand challenges and tumultuous relationships, but for our purposes, going into that might be a bit tedious. It is enough to say that by the time he was 25, Emont's name was known throughout the capital, although it was only whispered. After all, Emont refused to participate in the rather gaudy exhibitions hosted by the powerful and affluent styles of the capital. He was a poor man, even then with his success with the spear, and his tassel was a threadbare red piece that was so worn it almost seemed to be gray. Despite all this, Emont fell in love with a woman who was one of the chosen disciples of the endless heat style. Luckily for him, she liked him too. It came to be this very poor man from a style that didn't even have a skill set was hanging around a woman who would inherit an ancient rarity skill set. At first, the elders waved it away as children playing around and thought nothing of it. Then the woman became pregnant. Now the head elder at the time was furious, but he knew the female disciple was a stubborn sort, so he had a genius idea to set the terms of him being allowed into the style as an honorary disciple to legitimize the relationship. And more importantly, to set impossible terms. Emont was brought before the elder, and the elder told him the wonderful news about the pregnancy. Emont, a normally stoic man, smiled like he would be satisfied dying right there and then, if it came to it, which was exactly what the elder wanted. The elder continued to explain there were some negative rumblings about Emont and the female disciple from the other elders. That they weren't a proper match due to their difference in social status. And as Emont began to frown, the elder told the much younger man that he had an idea. Perhaps if Emont were to accomplish a seemingly impossible task, the elder could help Emont sway their feelings. If there was irrefutable proof of Emont's abilities, even those stubborn elders would be able to do naught but give in. What sort of task? Emont asked, and the elder said, well, how about going to the front lines and slaying @90932 and JK2389? Randomly was all too aware of how the words twisted midair and reverted briefly back to a language he couldn't understand. He wondered what sort of secret the system was trying to hide from him this time. Something from the front lines, huh? A war with who? Randomly wondered. Artisan Dway continued to speak, and his words once more became understandable. So Randomly didn't do anything other than file the information away for later. At first, Emont was dubious. The elder shook his head sorrowfully and asked if there was anything else Emont could think of that would be irrefutable proof of Emont's strength. Emont could only remain silent. The front lines were much more active in those days, and the %KLDSA were lousy with @90932 and JK2389. So obtaining an opportunity wouldn't be difficult. What was difficult was the task. Emont had gotten this far by relying on his two skills of struggle and battle intent, and this was no exception. Emont went and spent a year at the front lines, despite the female disciple's pleas. A year later he returned, older and stronger and tired, but without accomplishing his goal. But now his resolve was set. He visited his now several-month-old son and spent time with the woman he wanted to marry in front of the world. Then, after a week, he returned to the front lines. To the elder's horror, the female disciple was once more pregnant. Now it was extremely difficult for them to ignore the relationship between the two of them, because two sons had been made and were staying in the capital on their property. There was nothing they could do. All of the younger disciples were enamored with the children, showering the babies with affection. And there was the continued problem of Emont, By all accounts, he found and challenged at 90932 and JK2389 to combat quite frequently. And although he was never able to slay one, he did survive, which is more than most can say. He was formally enlisted and began to rise within the army ranks. After his second year on the front lines, Emont once more returned, and although he was covered in scars, his sons filled him with youthful vigor. This time he remained for a month, meeting and fraternizing with the young disciples, who were swept away by this powerful young man with stories of the front lines. After that time, he was forced to leave, but not before kissing both the eldest son, Pronto, and the younger son, Shawl, on the forehead. Then he was off. Emont did not return immediately to the front line. He still possessed 2 open skill slots and planned on using one to learn a skill that could push him to the next level. For after all, even if he had the power of an artisan, without a skill with a powerful image, he would never be formally recognized as an artisan, and his potential would be greatly diminished. He sought out a powerful individual who could teach him a powerful skill. It is unknown who he found, but he came back wielding the powerful skill, Wrathful Sickle, which greatly influenced his later images. That year he did not return from the front lines, nor the following year. It was 3 years later he returned, and when he came, it was with the head of a at 90932 in JK2389. Of course, the elders did not want Emont to be formally recognized, so they acted quickly while Emont was arriving. Some took it upon themselves to cut off the growth from the base. The female disciple was killed. Furious, Emont gathered up his sons and fled, leaving the central continent and heading to the north. Rumors say Emont walked out carrying his spear, burning with fury and the aura of death, while his elder son Pronto carried the much smaller Shawl like a baby in his arms. Strangely, no elder came forward to admit to causing the crime. In the aftermath, the head elder instituted a brutal inquisition, at first secret, but then increasingly public as they could not locate the culprit. The endless heat style even formally apologized to Emont, granting him an honorary discipleship for him and his sons. But it was too late. Emont would never in his life return to the central region. So Emont went to the northern region and seemed content to settle down and live a peaceful life, though 2 things nagged at him, refusing to let him retire. First, the situation on the front lines turned sour. So sour, it was believed for a long time that the central region would finally commit a few pontiff-level spear users. Second, a string of strange deaths in the surrounding area to Emont, of monsters, livestock, and even other people, led him to believe the culprit behind his lover's murder had followed them. But the culprit was a coward, and refused to move while Emont remained, protecting his sons. For 2 years, the condition on the front lines deteriorated, finally seeming to break under the stress of the realization this strange antagonist wouldn't strike while he was there, and his will eroded by the pleas of his former comrades, Emont made a decision. He would leave his sons under the protection of some of his powerful friends he had made in the north and return to the front lines in the western region. Although they were only 1 year apart, Pronto and Shawl were very different in their development. Pronto was strong and healthy, developing at an impossible rate. Meanwhile, Shawl was weak and uncoordinated, with the body of a toddler, even though he was almost 8 years old. So Shawl was sent to a style in the northern region affiliated with the Endless Heat style, where Emont knew he would be cared for. Meanwhile, Pronto went to stay with the powerful Healthing, who would aid in his spear instruction while Emont was gone. Years passed, and Emont began to return from the front lines less and less. His sons grew, Shawl seeming to finally settle in and grow properly, becoming a talented, if mean-tempered, youth. Meanwhile, Pronto grew more and more wild and powerful, his moods becoming violent. And at the same time, there started to be some very strange rumors going around about Heelthing. That there were numerous disappearances among people traveling through the lands his style controlled. That he was practicing a very forbidden sort of magic there. That he had become a devourer who consumes the lives of others in order to refine pure ether from them. Or, as the system refers to it, Heelthing had become a heretic. A strong chord struck deep inside Randedly's mind.
That's possible? Devouring someone else for ether?
Artisan Dway waved a hand.
Well, that is what the story says. At least the popular versions. Others have the devourer doing other things, but it all involved an evil magic transported here from one of the inner cohorts. And it all involved sacrifice to power it.
Chapter 90.
Anyway, while his one son was gradually being warped by exposure to the devourer, and the other was growing up slowly, both with a barely present father, Emont continued to fight on the front lines. And he continuously won. Perhaps the story wouldn't have ended so tragically otherwise, but Emont was a profoundly competent spear user. With just the one skill, he was acknowledged as reaching the adept level, given a promotion and control over a larger group of men. That was the worst fighting the front lines had ever seen, and Emont was the reaper who kept back the hordes. But it wasn't enough. We were still losing. At that point, the central region did demand its powerful style send pontiffs out to push back the enemies. Because some of those sent to his area were from the Endless Heat style, Emont took his long overdue break, returning to his sons. He stopped briefly in to see Shawl, and the people there urged him to investigate Heelthing. There were deaths and disappearances, so much so that Heelthing's style was almost destroyed from fear and defections. Emont's face darkened, though he said nothing. Instead, he simply had a long talk with Shawl. Emont stayed with Shawl for several days, giving him very specific pointers about spear use. Then Emont went to see Heelthing. It is not known what exactly they talked about, but is rumored that although Emont confronted Heelthing, he was tempted and distracted. Even his son, Pronto, whose mental illness was growing increasingly noticeable, could not distract from the goal that consumed Emont. Perhaps in his eyes, the army was his new family. And for that family, he needed strength. When Heelthing offered the use of his isolation matrix, Emont accepted. For 6 days, he stayed within, meditating, and when he emerged, he was a changed man. When he stepped out into the air, shrieking ghosts flowed around him. The specter of death lingered in his shadow. The lightest touch of Emont could steal away one's life from weak opponents. The years of fighting on the front lines, watching allies and enemies die in droves, it had paid dividends in a way. For Emont had spent 6 days in that formation, slowly refining the ether that had embedded itself within him for 20 years. He had become the Spear Phantom. His return to the front lines was as a walking catastrophe. He destroyed the resistance of the enemies. Beneath the pontiffs sent from the central region, Emont very quickly became the number one spear user on the western front. He was recalled from the front lines by news that could pierce his martial heart. His son, Pronto, had fled from Heelthing's care, wounded and blubbering about evil skills and forbidden rites.
With a heavy heart, Imant returned. Pronto had fled to Shawl's caretakers, where he refused to talk with anyone other than his family, preferring to lock himself in his room, refusing to take visitors. When he arrived, Imant interviewed both his sons, for Shawl had been the one to find Pronto in the wilderness and heard the truth for himself. Imant waited for Pronto to recover, and because he was a strong young man in his own right at this point, the two of them then went to the lair of the Devourer for vengeance. Before he left, he gave to Shawl a chest and a book, which was all the belongings Imant owned, aside from a sizable amount of pay left uncollected from the army, and formally established the Spear Phantom style, naming his sons Pronto and Shawl as his heirs. For a few weeks, he trained Shawl in the Spear Phantom style, its moves and intricacies. Then he proceeded with the eldest son to disappear off the face of the world. The area around Healthing's lair grew to be a zone forbidden for travel. Some local powers sent scouts in, but none returned. Still, if one did not enter into the zone, nothing happened. The zone was not spreading, and no monsters wandered out of that area either. As the local powers were busy sending spear users to reinforce the front lines, they opted to leave it alone, despite the danger. The land was avoided for 5 years. The only reason that 5 years ended was Shawl. He marched into the base and slaughtered Healthing. Unfortunately, he found his father and brother had already been slain. Or at least, that is what people originally thought, and why he was so widely heralded in the initial few years after he returned, bearing the spear of Healthing, the Devourer. But when experts went to investigate, they discovered that it appeared Healthing had been dead for years, likely by the hand of Imant. There had been a great battle, sure, and there was a body there, but it was so mutilated it was impossible to tell who it was. And the body of Imant, the war hero, was also discovered, peaceful and undisturbed, as if he was simply taking a nap. It was like his very life had been stolen from him. Some of the accolades fell away from Shawl, for there were too many pieces missing from the story, and he refused to speak of the situation, which didn't help his reputation. He opted to remain in the northern region, and he was barely seen training for 20 years. Rather, he was primarily seen just sitting, brooding, remaining in Katal, while most of the previous family friends, due to his mother and father, drifted away, fed up with his behavior. Even if people were initially skeptical of what happened, the few duels he got into and fits of anger in the aftermath convinced them he was exceedingly powerful. But to then sit and brood for 20 years? That was the actions of a weak-willed man. Although his potential was great, everyone concluded it would all come to naught. Artisan Dway gave Randidly a meaningful look. I am not sure why, but it appears your presence has awoken Shawl from his slumber. Based on how things fell, all is not resolved in his path. Be careful. And then he left, leaving Randidly and Claptrap alone. Claptrap sat back in his chair, almost glassy-eyed, his mouth forming a large O.
I can't believe. Wow.
Shrugging, Randidly stood. He thanked Claptrap, took some of the leather armor Claptrap obtained while he was away, and returned to Develtian's boat. As Randidly strolled back, he noticed he was being watched. And based on the crazy battle intent the other was throwing off, it wasn't with good intentions. Randidly made it all the way back with no incident, so perhaps he was being too paranoid. He had done that with Artisan Dway, too, immediately assessing him as a threat before anything else. Randidly grimaced.
It was a habit he developed in the prison, which he would likely need to work on. Although being prepared to fight at any time was good, acting too ready for a fight would bring more fights to him. Although he'd improved greatly, Randidly was under no impression he was unbeatable. Especially considering he had only been strong enough to get into the northeast area of the prison. The north and west were dominated by people far above his skill level. Now that his spear mastery was barely over 100, and the other skills had risen by about 20 each, hopefully Randidly would be able to hold his own in the regional tournament. Shawl had been very tight-lipped about that issue, simply giving him a scathing look when he asked. Randidly let it slide for now. Shawl obviously wanted the top 8 as much as Randidly did, probably more. He wanted it enough to call him up to this cohort, which was quite dangerous. At the time, Randidly had been quite weak. From the talk around the camp, Randidly had been able to gather that there were still monsters here, but they often were much, much stronger and forced back to certain areas. If he had wandered into one of those places. When Randidly arrived at the boat, he found someone else had beaten him there, and was standing there, hands on his hips, yelling at the top of his lungs.
What is this? How dare you touch my wares? You've doomed yourself. I will crush every little...
Enough!
Develtian said, his voice carrying a strange weight to it, even though he was standing 5 meters away at the edge of their ship's deck, and the yelling man was on another ship. When the vocal wave hit this small, portly little merchant-looking fellow, he froze and hiccuped. Randidly was bemused as the merchant seemed unable to control his body and began to twitch. The twitching became increasingly violent until the merchant keeled over and fell in the water. Shaking his head at the idiocy, Randidly leapt back onto their boat. It seemed the water had done some good, because the fool resurfaced, but in addition to spluttering, he once more began yelling.
Yes, yes, enjoy it now! You have no idea who I am! I'll crush this little enterprise like bugs!
The man's head jerked backwards as the nameless male spear attendant managed to hit the drowning merchant in the head with a bar of iron. As the merchant began to bob unsteadily, looking ready to pass out and really die, Develtian walked over to the male spear attendant and clapped him on the back.
To think I had written you off as a talentless retainer! Boy, never give up your dreams!
What do you mean, talentless retainer? The male spear attendant asked, frowning.
By this point, Helen and Telef had come over to him as well.
When I first met you, I directly assessed you as no threat to me, Telef said with relish. Then he sighed dramatically. But to think your manipulation of garbage had progressed to such a degree.
Wait, Helen interrupted him before he could get a word in edgewise. Even I am intimidated at your talent as a merchant. If I had a daughter of marriage age with some sort of physical handicap, I would gladly offer her body to you and know she would be well cared for, if physically unfulfilled.
You!
The male spear attendant's face had gone completely red, and he stabbed towards Helen with his spear. She chortled and twisted, spinning around the attack and past the male spear attendant. She kicked the back of his knees, knocking him off his feet.
You are as graceful as a fucking heart attack. Learn to read the mood, asshole, she said teasingly.
Telef and Develtian laughed. Although the corners of Randidly's mouth twitched upwards, he kept his eyes on the man in the water, who was being fished out by some servants. It was a hard habit to break, the calculating.
Fool disciple, will you simply moon about all day? Come, there is more training to do.
Shawl rumbled, his voice coming up from below. Sighing, Randidly turned and trotted into the belly of the ship. Of course, Shawl was right. There was always more training to do. Chapter 91. After mocking the male spear attendant for a while more, Helen moved off to the side. There had been a strange feeling when she dodged his attack.
a fluidity and grace that almost seemed like a movement similar to the three she already had. She smiled at her own foolishness. To inexplicably have inspiration now? After she already improved so much in such a short amount of time, a fourth movement would be too much to ask. But if she could parlay this into raising her skill level even further... The performance of Randidly and the other two at the qualifier had proven to Helen that, while she might be able to hold her own against them for a while, those individuals were cut from a different cloth. Whether it was pedigree, or the support of a powerful style, or an impossibly powerful skill, or the determination and willpower that made one's eyes absolutely burn like green emeralds, even in the darkness, even in the face of despair... Helen grimaced. God, she hated how fucking sappy she was getting lately. Helen distracted herself by moving through her three movements, and once again, taking her greatly by surprise, she gained skill levels. A lot. 7 in 4 hours of work, especially in the third movement, which was the most offensive of the three. Helen let her form drop, and she stared solemnly at her spear. Before coming here, she would never believe the sort of results she was receiving, seemingly just by being around these training-obsessed idiots. Even that worthless male spear attendant swiftly got over his humiliation from earlier and was now training, although he took the time to shoot glares at her. When he thought she wasn't looking, of course. That was just how Helen wanted it. Too many looks and he would be too dumb to even deal with. Too few, and there wouldn't be enough spirit within him to enjoy crushing. This was the perfect balance. Still, Helen knew why he threw himself into training so viciously. Unlike Helen, and likely everyone, even the strange new arrival Telif, the nameless spear attendant, didn't possess a skill set. Although this was a small thing, it determined a spear user's future. It was a pretty accurate barometer of their potential. A person with a skill set could grow far more quickly than one without. The rarity of the skill set was important, but it was almost a bonus. A higher rarity skill set would increase the power of the skill, but make it more difficult to level, and make the image perhaps more unwieldy. Although a common rarity skill set would be laughed at in terms of power, it would still be a skill set. The image would be quick and easy, ensuring the growth speed would be fast. If one had a choice between a 3-skill uncommon rarity skill set and a 4-skill common rarity skill set, many would go with the common rarity. It just made sense in terms of a person's future potential. After all, a skill set was technically only 1 skill in the eyes of the system. Spear users had been abusing this for generations to make an aristocracy among their youth, where as many skills as possible were skill sets, giving them that much of an advantage over everyone else. Not only were there path benefits, but the flexibility of the elites was a level higher than the average spear user. They had skill slots to spare for things like resistances and passive skills. Which was why Randidly tempted her. In terms of sources of genetics for her offspring, Helen repeated the phrase pounded into her head by her own mother.
A skill from the mother, a path from the father.
Helen pursed her lips. Of course the results were fucking random, and limited by prerequisites and the like. Typically, a child would be born with an innate skill from the mother and have access to a path from their father. The skill would be direct inheritance, which was why Helen had been innately talented in terms of leatherworking from a young age, and obtained access to related paths way ahead of her peers. She, of course, took great joy in refusing to invest path points in those paths and squandering her once-in-a-generation potential. Her mother's disappointment was the sweetest nectar, and her father's fury was how she learned to behave. Which is why it made sense when she obtained the Building Fury path on her 15th birthday. It proved to be a much more useful and fruitful investment, Helen believed. It certainly had made kicking the asses of all the handsy leatherworking boys more attainable. She wondered what sort of skill a child would be likely to inherit from her. Ideally, it would be the skill set.
But anecdotally, that was incredibly uncommon. Although the skill set counted as one skill for the purposes of the class skill limit, each skill also counted individually, as well as the skill set, seeming to have an even lesser chance of appearing. Still, any of the three movements Helen had would be a fucking blessing to a child. More so than leatherworking. Even by the time the child was ready to get the spear user class, their mastery over the skill would lead to future accomplishments. More power early meant more opportunities, more dungeons, more pure ether from which to focus on your own image. It was a cycle that reinforced itself. But really, what Helen wanted to know was completely unrelated to her. What sort of path would having Randidly as a father open for a child? Shaul sat in meditation, watching his disciple grit his teeth as he read from the diary of Shaul's father. Shaul knew in his heart he hadn't been fair to Randidly when they left the prison. The killing of the guard was unnecessary, but made sense, given what Shaul had been teaching him about life. Given that Shaul had okayed the battling and sometimes killing of those inside the prison. Given that Shaul had encouraged Randidly to kill the guard originally in order to earn themselves a berth in prison. Those had been necessary, in Shaul's mind, in order for them to go down this path. For at his core, Shaul knew the truth. Shaul did not fear Randidly was becoming like his father. Shaul feared that he himself was making that transition. A man who viewed his children and those lessers simply as tools. For he remembered something said to him a long time ago, in one of the brief times he'd seen his father after becoming the Spear Phantom. It was one of the last times, leading up to Shaul's father's trip to visit the Devourer. "Why did you let him get like this?" Shaul asked, tears in his eyes, wringing his 12-year-old hands. Shaul's father turned and regarded him. Then, to Shaul's surprise, the most unrelenting and stiff man Shaul knew sighed. The cruelty and the powerful aura of death the man carried with him vanished, if just for a moment. He said, "It is easier to walk down the path of strength first, and then worry about integrity later, only once you have the power to defend it." That Shaul found himself encouraging Randidly down a similar path 50 years later disgusted him. But there was a fire in his chest that he couldn't put out, and it had a name, Lucretia. His disciple gasped and dropped the diary. Calmly waiting, Shaul watched as Randidly groaned, stretched, walked around a bit, then sat back down with the diary. Continuing along with Shaul's ridiculous request to keeping with just the first and fifth entry. The proper way would have been to gradually immerse in the different battle intents for the 6 moves, one at a time, building up a familiarity with the style, and hopefully mastering them all someday. Only Shaul had tried that path. When he trained in the moves of the Spear Phantom, he pushed himself deeper and deeper, focusing on his foundation. And of course, that didn't turn out well enough to be proud of. He only managed to master 4 of the 6 moves. What was perhaps even more frustrating about the whole ordeal was that those 4 stances were enough to absolutely dominate those below the adept level. The sheer overwhelming power of the image his father created was ridiculous, and so very different than the father Shaul remembered growing up with. Even then there was a darkness to him, but it manifested itself as a tiredness, not as the vicious, unrelenting authoritarian he became in later years, even as he was rarely around. In fact, Shaul only received 1 week of instruction in the Phantom Spear style from his father in real time. Some of that had been stretched through a dungeon, but only up to a month. Perhaps if he had more, he could glean some secret, some trick or insight that would allow him access to all 6 moves. For all of this was for revenge. Partially against his father, perhaps even a sliver against his brother, Pronto. But most of all, revenge against the woman who set them on that tragic path. Lucretia. This was Shaul's gamble with Randidly. On the one hand, Shawl hoped Randidly would really be able to master the Phantom's embrace. That would increase his disciple's chances of surviving in the tournament to almost assured. It was, however, his disciple, and there was always a chance he would fuck it up. The real goal was not to increase his disciple's strength, but to see if building a bridge without the foundation is possible. If that was true, Shawl's eyes burned. The third eye, lodged in his forehead, stirred. If that was true, Shawl would skip the fifth and proceed to the sixth, the breath of the Spear Phantom. Chapter 92. Randidly forced his gaze to follow along with the words on the page of the diary. All resist the Phantom, for they know he steps in the wake of death like a shadow. And as Randidly read the words, it was there, or rather, he. After hearing the story about Shawl and his history, especially of his father, Randidly could see the man. His small smile, his broad shoulders, his short dark hair. Unlike Shawl, his skin was not dyed blue, but was a dull red color. From his shoulders hung a long leather cloak, shredded at the edges. But his eyes burned, and as Randidly read the first line, he appeared and began to float towards Randidly. They flinch away from his touch, as fear erodes control of their very body. Perhaps if they were able to remain equipped with their faculties, their struggles would have meaning. But before the Phantom, Randidly's body began to tremble. The approach of the Phantom carried with it an aura of palpable death, almost as if Randidly had inhaled the scent of a rotting body. The air became increasingly warm and fetid. And Randidly clenched his fists. He refused to give in, even as the image drifted closer. Before the Phantom, all other things break and scatter. The path he walks is long and wide. It is multifarious and insidious, a small step to the side. But once those people step upon it, for whatever reason, they have doomed themselves. At that point, although they may struggle, roaring, Randidly created a spear of battle intent and threw it at the Phantom. Although it may have just been his imagination, he thought the Spear Phantom smiled at him right before it disappeared. The next thing he felt was a thin, cold hand on his shoulder, tapping lightly, as if to take his attention. Refusing to back down, Randidly backed around and faced the Phantom. Finding it standing there, its arms spread wide, its leather cloak was open, flapping lightly by an ethereal wind, revealing not the human torso Randidly expected, or even a skeleton's body, but a face. A sleeping one. At first, Randidly thought the face was Shawl's. The longer he looked, the more the subtle differences between them began to come to the surface. This was softer and warmer than Shawl's. Although the nose was the same, the cheekbones were less prominent and wider. Randidly was frozen, suddenly very confused by what he was looking at. A face, rather than a torso underneath the cloak. Somehow, it was incredibly disturbing. This was still the image conjured by the battle intent, right? The eyelids of the sleeping face trembled, then blinked open, its long, beautiful eyelashes fluttering. As the eyes opened, Randidly wondered whether the androgynous face was male or female. Now Randidly blinked, because the face spoke, its lips moving thickly, clumsy and rusty from disuse. The eyes opened further. They were pure black and wet like spilled ink. The Phantom continued to stand, holding that cloak open, his smile fading away to a frown, his eyes furrowed into an angry bunch. Although they struggle, it is too late, for the very path they walk is their end, As soon as the specter of death tempted them into its realm, their lives begin flickering like candles, their blood seeming to drip out of their mouths and pool on the path behind them. The path... I'm so... hungry. The weary chest face said. It began to open its mouth and suck, its inky eyes locked onto Randidly. The ether inside of him trembled, as if some outside force acted on it, causing Randidly to instinctually take a step backward. Immediately, the phantom itself let its arms drop. Its smile returned. Its fingers grew and grew, surrounding Randidly, forming a cage that began to press inwardly to crush and burst his organs, leaving him... Gasping, Randidly dropped the diary again. For several seconds, the very real phantom pain remained, his body reacting as though it had been annihilated. It passed, likely blown out of him by his heavy breathing. Shaw sat there, regarding him coolly.
That is quite enough for today, I think,
he said simply, reaching down and taking the diary. He left Randidly there, laying on the ground. After his breathing had calmed, Randidly closed his eyes and tried to focus on remembering what happened. That face that looked similar to Shaw's on the chest of the phantom, its inky black eyes, the strange change in the phantom the longer Randidly looked at that face. That face was even able to cause some effect on the ether within him that Randidly struggled with at the best of times. And that hunger in its blank eyes. Randidly now had a more concrete idea about the phantom's embrace as a move, although he wasn't sure how it worked. It was a skill that produced an overwhelming psychological effect and pressed your opponent backwards. It turned the momentum of their fleeing against them, becoming increasingly powerful the more they attempted to dodge. But... if someone did not flee or did not attack, it was useless. However, the face didn't seem to fit into Randidly's impression of the move. It felt like that was a larger part of the image within the book, and less to do with the actual skill. Or perhaps it was a specter of whatever the sixth move of the spear phantom was. Either way, this was far beyond the current Randidly. For now, he could only concentrate on the goals that would yield positive results. He stood and began to practice the inevitable phantom arrives. His strikes were slow and even. Though he hadn't gleaned any true insights from his studying of the fifth move of the spear phantom, his battle intent was increasingly strengthened by the exposure. The ticking grew louder, his own temporal phantom more definite, and Randidly began to add more and more details. Almost unbidden, small memories of his mother floated to the surface. As Randidly remembered how worn her clothes always were when she wasn't going out, the robe the phantom wore became threadbare and gray. He remembered how she smelled, like honey and flowers just starting to rot, and how she smiled, almost as if she was apologizing with her eyes, while her mouth was stretched wide. And as these details began to accumulate in the image, Randidly's feelings about the image ballooned outward in his heart. With ether thundering in his ears, a vicious, icy flow, Randidly's rage and frustration that he had buried for years began to surface, filling his image with potency. Randidly remembered how he sat in his room in the dark for many hours, afraid and confused by the long nights of laughter his mother had with strange men, even on weekdays. The way he would hide in his room while the men were there, even as he grew hungrier and hungrier. He refused to allow himself to be dragged out and paraded in front of them. He remembered the men and their callous hands, their patronizing smiles, and their eyes all for his mother. It ignited something hot and vicious inside of Randidly. Helpless, stuck, torn by emotions, dragged in a thousand directions. As Randidly focused more and more on that small boy, his arms wrapped around his knees, sitting in the dark, the ticking grew louder and louder.
almost to a deafening degree. With each tick, the hours would slide past. The child's hunger would grow more desperate and gnawing. But the laughter, tinkling and light, and low and dirty, grew louder and louder, a droning that began to rival the ticking. Abruptly, Randidly became aware of the fact he had been standing still, and he thrust out with his spear, not bothering to use haste or empower, just thrusting forward with the spear. And as he completed the motion, now much quicker than it had been when he trained before he went into the prison, there was no feedback, no cracking of the air, no vacuum created. There was just silence, and a strange sensation in Randidly's hand. That his spear was as heavy as the world. Randidly sighed, letting the silence grow. This was part of his image, too, the powerful silence that surrounded that boy in the darkness. The ticking was scary, in a way, because it demonstrated the passing of time and the inevitability of resisting time. By the same token, the silence was even more horrifying. Because in that silence, time twisted and morphed, becoming an abomination that no longer obeyed objective rules. It stretched to fill subjective spaces. In that silence, that darkness, even a minute felt like an eternity. Ether howled within him now, and he held that image in his mind for several minutes, as thin tendrils of ether split off and flowed down into his skills, strengthening them. After a while, the sensation ceased, and Randidly checked his status screen. He gained 1 skill level in spear mastery, 2 in empower, 1 in body control, freeze, 3 in engraving, 2 in rejection, but then 7 in battle intent, and 11 in the inevitable phantom arrives. Randidly distributed the path points he earned, netting 3 resistance and willpower. But as he made to stand afterward, his chest began to ache. Grimacing, Randidly sat back down and put his hand on the spot where his soul skill whirled wildly inside his chest. This wasn't nearly as bad as the previous incident, but still, it burned like the kind of heartburn that could kill you, eating you from the inside out. Luckily, it passed relatively quickly, though it annoyed Randidly. This wasn't something Randidly wanted to deal with right now. He would be participating in the tournament soon, and if it happened in the middle of a match... This level was nothing. Except ether activity seemed to exacerbate the issue. In a tough match, there was a very real chance of the soul skill escalating beyond the point Randidly could control. Based on this pain, if the soul skill spun so fast it ripped itself apart, Randidly wasn't really sure about the physical consequences of the ether backlash, but if it was just ripped out of his body... Shuddering, Randidly meditated, until the pain passed. Chapter 93. Shawl hoped his disciple hadn't seen how his hand trembled when he grasped his father's diary. It had been all he could do to make it into the hallway at a normal gait before he collapsed, the strength leaving his body. Slamming into the wall, Shawl leaned there for several seconds, not daring to make a sound. Luckily, it seemed his disciple hadn't heard. He was too occupied with his own activities. Shawl limped and dragged himself to his own quarters, where he collapsed in a heap. The diary was dropped to the ground like the trash Shawl thought it was. But in that moment, it wasn't some sweet revenge. It was an infuriating reminder of his own weakness. Shawl breathed heavily for an hour, just lying there. And the weakness grew worse, snaking its way up from his extremities towards his chest. There had never been a case of ether poisoning killing someone. But there had been well-documented instances where someone who was within a dungeon for a few years had gone into a coma to conserve energy while the connection to the village spirit was reestablished. This was one of the main ways the first spear maintained control. When you came out,
He controlled access to some dungeons with lesser time dilation than the prison, which you could use to manage half of your symptoms before you came back to normal time. You could also complete those dungeons and be rewarded with Dungeon Boss Ether, which could be used as a patch to cover your ether needs until the village connection restored itself. Without these stopgaps, the body's ether would be quickly devoured, especially considering Shaw's level. He'd considered going into a dungeon while randomly participated in the earlier rounds of the regional tournament, which were designed to root out the weak, but he hadn't taken it seriously. Now Shaw wondered whether he could make do without it to keep him going. That path would force him to leave Randedly alone, because Divot would need to escort Shaw to the dungeon. That alone would probably wound Shaw's pride more than he could handle right now, so it was a distant possibility. As his vision began to swim, however, Shaw didn't really see any other way. He resisted the urge to grit his teeth, as it was a waste of energy. It would be a gamble. Thus far, the people who had come to the boat to challenge them for their tassels had mostly been targeting Shaw. The actions of his father and himself, rightly, were suspected by anyone who knew this story. Why had Emont allowed the Devourer to continue to exist when he had the care of his son? He'd even taken advantage of the isolation formation to develop his own skill set. Was it possible that the war hero, Emont the Phantom, had sold his son to a monster in order to gain power? This was how most of the people viewed those dark times. It made Shaw want to laugh, but at the moment, he controlled the urge. Selling his son for power? No. Emont was a much more calculating and sinister man than that, Shaw wanted to tell them. Emont sold his entire life for power, and didn't even have the human decency to apologize to Shaw after all the lies and evil he grew up breathing like it was second nature. Even Shaw's name was nothing but a lie. Shaw grunted, shutting that thought process down. Now was not the time to worry about truth. Now was just part of the journey. In the darkness, Shaw's eyes opened. It would be a gamble. This wasn't about making it out of the casino with enough money to cover his costs. This was about burning the place to the ground. As Shaw laid on the ground, he began to consider likely locations. The level would have to be low and the distance short. If it were on the way to Dearden, Shaw smiled wanly. The first place that popped into his head was the most likely answer, although Shaw detested the coincidence of it. It was an extremely low-level dungeon, only built for people in the high teen levels. And it was the place Emont had taken him that week before he went with Pronto to see Healthing. The male spear attendant had furiously challenged Telif the first time in the wake of the mocking due to the material dumping. He woke up several minutes later, wondering what happened. Under Develtian's amused guidance, he trained for 3 hours and promptly challenged Telif again. The man simply snorted. This duel lasted slightly longer, and at least was saved in the male spear attendant's memory banks, mostly due to the fact it was more torture session than duel. Eventually, Helen grew tired of his whimpers as he lay bleeding on the deck and lovingly fed him a health potion. She, of course, did this by putting the open end of the bottle in his mouth and smashing the rest in with her heel. The male spear attendant wasn't offended by the cuts from the broken glass. Instead, he was touched she took the time to look after him. The training session that followed was longer and lasted until dawn, as the male spear attendant struggled to get the wild ether in his chest to flow in the image he wanted. Tirelessly, he attempted again and again. Develtian, in a rare show of rest, lounged on a futon-looking mat. As Develtian watched the male spear attendant, he could only sigh and shake his head.
Fool, you are better off spending your time working on your form, not your image. The image will follow.
The male spear attendant ignored him, attempting again and again to refine the image for his bulwark of iron he created. It was still a fuzzy thing, and he struggled incessantly with it. Midway through his training, the male spear attendant stopped, frowning at the deck. Some very strange, almost ripples, were coming up from below, disturbing his image. They were incredibly weak, which was exactly why they were difficult to ignore. He didn't sense them coming, and then they were suddenly pressed lightly up and around him, like ocean waves on toes. They demanded attention in a strange fashion.
"What is that?"
the male spear attendant asked, his expression twisted into annoyance. What was even more annoying was that Telef and Helen continued to train stoically, frantically perfecting their own technique. Helen's sensual movements continued without pause, her curvaceous body possessing more and more hidden power to the male spear attendant's eyes. Telef continued to be a mystery. His strikes were direct and short, while the air seemed incredibly turbulent in the area around him. Develtian snorted at the question and rolled over. For a long time they just stood there, the male spear attendant growing increasingly annoyed that no one was answering him. Finally, he received an answer, but it was from the new spear attendant, with the cloth tied around his eyes.
The ghost hound, is at the door of the artisan level. Those ripples? Those are his image, beginning to be visible to those not on the receiving end of the skill.
The male spear attendant's mouth formed into an O, but Develtian was rolling over and snorting.
While technically true, don't get ahead of yourself. Like I said to this spear idiot, it's better to focus on skill level than the image. He, like you, is working on the image too early. He's just good at it. In terms of power,
Develtian's face became thoughtful.
Perhaps he could pass the artisan test if he kept working on it, but it would be mostly in name, not in fact. He does not yet possess the skill in his movement and basic spear ability to equal any who are legitimate artisans. Probably.
Still worlds ahead of us,
Helen said, her voice strangely dark. The beautiful woman continued to frown as her body flowed and twisted. Telef nodded and swiftly began training again. Doing his best to ignore the strange ripples emanating from below, the male spear attendant began to train. Unfortunately, they continued to lightly press up against him, almost tickling him. The strange, light touch was too much to bear.
God fucking damn it!
The male spear attendant yelled, throwing his spear to the ground. Helen giggled, which was gratifying, but both Develtian and Telef seemed content to ignore him. What was even more humiliating was that, at that moment, the ripples stopped. The male spear attendant's heart grew cold. Had the ghost hound heard? Sure enough, soon there was the sound of approaching footsteps on wood, and the ghost hound climbed onto the deck, looking around. The male spear attendant was almost shivering, but kept his back straight. Although he might get punished for this, he wouldn't back down. After all, in a way, it was very rude for the ghost hound to create those ripples while people were trying to train. The male spear attendant would calmly explain the situation, and it would become clear that he wasn't in the wrong. After glancing around with a frown, the ghost hound walked towards the male spear attendant.
Hey, you...
The male spear attendant prostrated himself on the ground.
Please forgive me. It was a small mistake. I won't ever dare breathe in front of you again.
The ghost hound just stared at him, seemingly dumbfounded. Then, slowly, he looked at the others and said,
What's up with him?
He hasn't developed a backbone, the little fucker.
Helen said sweetly and winced, as if scared of something, and hurriedly threw herself back into training. The male spear attendant peeked up to check the ghost hound's reaction. After all, as with all things, the male spear attendant was profoundly gifted in subterfuge and misdirection, although he hadn't yet fully developed his innate potential in those areas. But in terms of raw talent, the ghost hound was just standing there, his eyes following the lines of Helen's body as she trained. After a few seconds, he almost unwillingly dragged his eyes back to the male spear attendant.
Yes, well, I just wanted to try a skill. You have a defensive skill you created, right?
Slowly standing, the male spear attendant nodded. He picked up his spear and adopted a defensive stance, nervously keeping his sights on the ghost hound. The man removed a small bone spear from his ring, settled back, and thrust. Whereas before there had been only small ripples, now there was a constant ticking, a stream of low female laughter, almost hysterical at the edges, a strange, suffocating blackness, a sense of weakness and frustration, of overwhelming power, and the floating image of a smiling, almost apologetic woman as she floated closer with her arms spread wide. It did not crush his iron bulwark or rip through it. Rather, it merely slid cleanly forward, moving through his defensive image like it wasn't even there. It was heavy and inevitable. When it struck the male spear attendant's chest, it was simply a stiff jab, sending him several steps backwards. All of the male spear attendant's confidence deserted him, and he felt himself seized by fear and a growing relief. A relief that he'd started following this man before he fully transformed into the monster he would become. Chapter 94. Randidly frowned, confused. That had been way too easy. Why had the man not even blocked? Well, it wasn't that he hadn't blocked, but the block had been rather... Devaltian slapped his knee, laughing.
It's not worth your time to practice against that idiot. He's challenging you directly with images, and your battle intent is to the level that his can't even touch you. You should,
Devaltian stilled, and he looked out across the boats.
Well, never mind. It seems we have company. Move to the side. This is no longer a probe. It seems your absence has made them serious.
As Devaltian spoke, Randidly saw them skimming from deck to deck across the bobbing, interconnected fleet. A group of seven ran off of a nearby boat and leapt, aiming for their boat. Devaltian's face tightened, and for a moment he appeared to be locked in an internal struggle. Then he gazed at Randidly, and his gaze softened.
I suppose it really is time to stop playing around.